Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Northumberland County farmers are facing skyrocketing diesel fuel prices. The cost of fertilizer is off the charts. Labor costs are up, and it is a challenge to find workers. None of this was caused by them. The war between Iran, the United States, and Israel closed the Strait of Hormuz, blocking vital supplies. Add to this American tariffs, stalled trade talks between the United States and Canada, along with additional issues, and you have an uncontrollable, volatile environment to start the planting season. The atmosphere of uncertainty hangs like a dark cloud over every decision. Meanwhile, the provincial and federal governments are announcing various programs to protect this vital sector. But are these solutions needed? Take a moment to listen to the president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture as he puts all this into perspective. I'm so pleased to welcome back once again Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Alan Carruthers. Good to see you again. Welcome to Consider This.
Good to see you too, Robert. Thank you.
Farmers across Canada are facing rising diesel fuel, fertilizer, and labor costs due to a series of events beyond their control. Prices for diesel and fertilizer have nearly doubled since the war involving the United States, Iran, and Israel, as vital shipments have been stalled at the Strait of Hormuz. In all the years you have worked the farm, is there anything that can compare to the pressures facing farmers at this moment?
No, Robert. Well, about the only thing I guess probably would bring to mind, and it's not recent, in the early 80s, we saw interest rates climb quite high, you know, 16, 18, 20% for loans and liabilities that we had to carry for our production in the early 80s. This brings, you know, it's a hard thing to swallow at times when we're seeing fuel prices climb so high. Like, you know, I dug out some invoices from early January, and diesel fuel was a $1.18 a liter, and now we're seeing over, like, and this is farm fuel, you know, and that's plus HST obviously, and then, you know, today's price is a $1.74 plus HST, so, you know, quite a huge increase in the price of fertilizer, or sorry, for fuel. Fertilizer has probably seen a 25 to, depending on whether it be phosphate or nitrogen or potash, on average probably 25% increase from last fall, and we're probably going to see another 15 to 20% increase for this coming fall, because a lot of nitrogen fertilizer, especially, has to be produced through the use of natural gas, and that source is coming through the Strait of Hormuz. You know, about 35% of the fertilizer that is nitrogen fertilizer that's produced and used in the world comes through that strait. Phosphate pressures obviously are increasing all the time also, and phosphate fertilizers come from Morocco and some in out of Florida, where potash is relatively stable. A lot of it comes out of Western Canada, but still, it's the cost of transportation bringing all those commodities to our local market. And, you know, as we know, fuel prices have climbed so high that the truckers or transporters have put a 15 to 20% fuel surcharge on all their shipping. So It costs more to get the fertilizer delivered to the fertilizer plant. It costs more for us to go pick up the fertilizer or have it delivered to our farms or our businesses, you know. And then, you know, that precipitates down to increased fuel costs for planting and caring for our harvest, caring for our crops through to harvest. And then, of course, we have to pay extra fuel charges for taking that commodity to market, you know, in summer and fall.
There are costs associated with inputs. These are the things that it takes to grow a crop or to raise livestock. We've talked about the major pressure points, but are there other factors that are not so high profile that are impacting farmers in Northumberland?
The one thing that kind of comes to mind, Robert, that's hard for us to get stuff done is the availability of reliable labor. You know, I know that you know, I've had this conversation with quite a few people over the last couple of months, that it's harder and harder for them to find reliable help to work on their farm. You know, a lot of people want to have they want to have a comfortable lifestyle. They want to have lots of cash to do certain things. They want to travel. You know, as our age demographics getting older, you know, I would love to travel too, but I like doing the work that I'm doing, planting a crop and watching it grow. But the pressures of trying to get somebody to help is very, very hard. You know, and I think a lot of businesses in Northumberland County, even in the province of Ontario, are having a hard time trying to entice people to come to work.
I'd like to come back to that in just a little bit, but I'd like to still talk about some of these pressures. I'd like to talk about tariffs for a moment. Are farmers affected by the tariffs being imposed by the United States at all?
Yes, they are. So, metals, aluminum, steel, they have pushed the price of these products that get, you know, built into tractors and trucks and parts for their combines and planters and tractors. And it's harder and harder for a person to go out and source reliable, decently priced parts. Like, it used to be that we could have a part for our tractor or our truck, you know, in 24 hours. Now we're seeing 3 to 5 days or even 2 weeks before we get our parts. We asked the supplier why we haven't got, why they don't have the parts. Well, they're just not available. And I think part of it is they're frustrated also because a lot of companies are not building the replacement parts. They would sooner sell a brand new tractor. They didn't really want to make a bunch of parts for these pieces of machinery.
I understand somewhere between 36 to 39% of Canada's total agri-food and seafood exports go to the United States. How much produce and livestock from Northumberland are transported to the United States?
I have a hard time getting a handle on that, but you know, I look at, you know, take for interest beef. Beef has to be transported to processors either in Western Ontario. There is some local mom and pop processing, you know, in the area within an hour and a half or 2 hours drive in Northumberland County. But most of it, I would say that 35 to 40% would probably go to the States for processing. Donald Trump wants to try to be more self-sufficient, and that kind of hurts our bottom dollar when we have excess product that we'd like to market, you know, and be able to make some profit on.
Well, why aren't there more processors in Ontario, or even for that fact, locally?
A lot of the processing capacity has been sold over the years. You know, more red tape. Canadian Food Inspection Agency had more rules and regulations that needed to be. Some of the aging infrastructure that these processors had You know, some of the buildings were getting old. The machinery, the packaging was getting very, very old and archaic. And it was easier for a big company to have a big area where they've got all this commodity, all the commodities, and all the new ideas and new packaging and stuff can come in place. And a lot of that's happening in the northern U.S. states. Canada, you know, the Canadian Food Inspections Agency, the federal government, provincial government, they're not keeping up on these things. And I think they need to invest some more money and more time in getting and enticing some of these processors to come back to Ontario.
Well, it seems strange. I mean, we seem to be able to cough up a lot of government money for auto manufacturers and the auto industry. And yet, when it comes to food and sustainability, we don't seem to want to make the same level of investment.
No, that's correct. You know, and the frustrating part of it is that the federal government, the provincial government, and even the local people figure our food comes from our grocery stores. I'm sorry, but the food has got to come a couple more steps before the grocery stores. It's got to come from a greenhouse. It's got to come from an acre of land or 2 acres of land and stuff out in the countryside or more. And you know, it has to be processed and it has to be cleaned and safe to eat and safe to produce and safe to eat.
The Canadian-U.S.-Mexico Agreement, the CUSMA, is under negotiation right now. And one of the irritants that people keep talking about, at least from the American perspective, is supply management. How concerned are Northumberland farmers about these current talks?
Supply management, it's pretty simple math for us. We're guaranteed a price of what our commodity is. If we don't have a secure price, then we can't be sustainable. We can't invest in our own operations. We can't invest in some of the technologies out there, up and coming technologies. And if we don't have that supply management, then we don't have a secure, safe, reliable food source. And supply management has been developed over the years. Like, you know, feather and milk have been a stable supply managed with cost of production in there. And it's the federal government in the States thinks that that is a kind of one way of having an unfair business. But in Canada, it protects our local producers from having to sell everything and move away and not have a reliable food source close to home. And you know, the Ontario Federation of Agriculture has been preaching, you know, buy local. You know, there was a program 20 years ago, the 100-mile diet. And you know, I was amazed at how much food that is supplied in a grocery store, No Frills or Metro or you know, the other ones, that's a lot of that food could be produced within a 100-mile diet, you know, 100 miles of travel. And the investment of getting that here is quite a bit. So not very often you get to see bananas grown in 100 miles from let's say Toronto. There is and there was a greenhouse in Western Ontario that was producing bananas. You know, pineapples is a hard thing to produce. We can't always have strawberries 365 days a year, but some of the technology out there is now getting it so it can be grown in greenhouses year round in Ontario. You know, we've always relied on our eggs and our milk and our meat and stuff to be produced every day and consumed every day locally.
I want to come back to a topic we talked about earlier in our conversation, and that is labor. Now, I understand farmers are still getting support from the federal government to hire foreign workers. Is that having any impact on the labor costs?
Yes, it is. But the foreign workers, we seem to have a little bit more reliable source of convenient, willing workers that come from third world countries, Mexico, Jamaica, Cuba. They have people that, they have the people that come from those countries, have a willingness to work. They're willing to work long hours. They're well respected. They do a great job at producing and harvesting our food. The hard part is the local labor, and I don't want to sound critical about it, but there's a lot of people that don't want to show up for work anymore. And I think every business has that problem. Doesn't matter whether you're a trucking company or a produce company or a clothing company, they have a hard time trying to get workers to come and show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, at 7 o'clock in the morning, at 11 o'clock in the morning, and put in a full day's work.
Farmers face huge pressures as developers and municipalities are hungry for development and the assessment, which of course means tax dollars, it brings to allowing developers to gobble up farmland. How would you characterize the current situation when it comes to farmers selling land in Northumberland?
Well, I know it comes down to everybody wants to come and live a decent lifestyle. And if the farmer can't get a reliable income and there's no family or nobody else that are interested in producing food on that, they welcome a developer to come to their property and buy it. But some of the rules and regulations that are out there, and of course, I mentioned earlier, Robert, that we're losing about 320 acres a day to development. And that was the last census, 2016 to 2021. We've seen a real uptake in loss of class one and class two land. It's very frustrating to see class one and class two land get paved over and grow houses on it. We do welcome development to the area, but there are places for housing to go. Like most of the municipalities have got municipal boundaries, and so those municipal boundaries, we're hoping that the municipalities try to keep the development in those municipal boundaries. And there is lots of land in most municipalities that can support growth upwards. Putting up an 8 or 10 story apartment building, multiple family dwellings, per acre or per lot. We when we keep losing all this flat level land or this cleared land on a hill, where a lot of developers think, oh, it'd be great to have a house on a hill. We can see the countryside for miles, but it makes more sense to plant a house in an area where it's the crops are not adversely affected, and they probably don't grow a great crop. Flat level land is what a developer wants.
Has anyone approached you and said that they're looking to leave farming because of everything that's going on right now?
No, not really. Not that I have heard. There's been some people that have said it's pretty tough to go in this. I talked to some agricultural businesses, and they find it pretty frustrating of the local pressures and the provincial and federal pressures of buying commodities to supply the farmers.
If listeners wanted to do something to assist local farmers right now, is there anything that they can do?
I would say buy and support local. That goes a long ways. It's pressure the companies that they work with and work for to support local. It's always nice to see somebody come and only lives a few miles away and is very glad to purchase some product from that's produced and grown in Northumberland County. I know Burnham Family Farms. They do an excellent job in promoting and growing local produce, and that's being sold in Northumberland County. And I know there's lots of family-run businesses in Northumberland County that rely on local consumers.
Alan Crothers, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert. It was quite enjoyable.
That was Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Alan Crothers. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.